Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Staples.
I'm Monica Ricks in New York. A historic indictment today against Hunter Biden, who faces federal charges for lying on paperwork about his drug use to buy a gun in Delaware and for possessing a gun while on narcotics. CBS's Catherine Herridge is in Washington.
These are very serious gun charges, felony gun charges, and that can bring very hefty fines as well as jail time. It seems pretty clear to me that this could provide some leverage or incentive from the special counsel to Hunter Biden's team to try and reach a settlement on this issue alone.
And this comes a day after Republicans announced an impeachment inquiry against President Biden and ahead of 2024. Political analyst Larry Sabato.
It's fueling the Republicans. It gives additional jitters to the Democrats, and it causes personal distress to the president.
If convicted, Hunter faces years in prison. In Georgia, a judge has separated the state's RICO case, which means former President Trump and 16 defendants will be tried apart from two others. Attorney Joseph Tully.
Two people that have said, look, we're not waiving speedy trial. We want to go to trial right away. Everybody else is saying we need time to look at over all the evidence. We need time to adequately prepare. So the judge is cutting basically two of the accused loose. And they will be tried together.
Lawyers Sidney Powell and Kenneth Chesbrough go on trial next month. The House Freedom Caucus is reportedly threatening Speaker Kevin McCarthy's job now if he doesn't agree to deep spending cuts.
We're going to get this done. Nobody wins in a government shutdown. Nobody wins in a government shutdown. I've been here.
The government shuts down if Congress can't reach a deal by the end of the month.
We're here. We're ready to negotiate.
Ford CEO Jim Farley's also fighting to keep the lights on ahead of a major contract deadline with auto workers tonight. Here's CBS's Jared Hill.
The United Auto Workers Union is preparing a walkout if they haven't reached a contract agreement with General Motors, Ford, and Stellantis by midnight. The UAW is pushing for a 40% pay raise over 4 years, a 32-hour work week with 40-hour pay, and a return to traditional pensions for new hires.
We are preparing to strike these companies in a way they've never seen before.
In Libya, more than 11,000 people have died in floods. CBS's Charlie Daggett.
Now, the focus is on survivors because thousands of homes have been lost. Hundreds of thousands of people have been displaced. Some of them are in desperate need of, the basics, clean water, food, and medicine.
Here at home, Hurricane Lee's threatening parts of New England this weekend with heavy rains and rough surf. The storm could be a Category 1. This is CBS News.
Staples stores provide innovative products and services for small business, remote workers and learners, even teachers and parents. Explore more at your local Staples store.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. 120,000 miles of night drives, daily commutes, and who knows how many.
Are we there yet?
Through countless fixes, elbow grease, and a new radiator, you kept your ride alive. With eBay Motors, you have over 122 million parts to keep it running. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, they'll be the perfect fit every time. Plus, at these prices, well, we're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Over the Back Fence has moved. Tune in on Saturdays at 11 a.m. for an hour of water cooler talk, items you're looking to buy or sell, upcoming events in central Wisconsin, or just whatever. Join the conversation by calling 715-424-2600, and we'll go over the back fence at its new day and time, Saturdays at 11 a.m. It's the audio community bulletin board that comes to you. We'll see you there.
For WFHR and WIRI, I'm Melissa Kay. Here's what you need to know in central Wisconsin. There was a fatal motor vehicle crash in Adams County on August 31st between a semi-truck and two other vehicles that has now claimed the life of at least one person. The semi-truck driver was 27-year-old Zachary Kleinschmidt of Fort Atkinson. He failed to stop at a stop sign while crossing Highway 13 on County Highway C. His semi hit two other vehicles which were traveling on Highway 13. Zachary was transported by LifeLink helicopter due to his injuries. The other two drivers and one passenger were transported to the hospital by ambulance. The passenger, Gregory Pleka, age 76, of Arkdale, later succumbed to the complications of his injuries. Charges for homicide by negligent operation of a motor vehicle are being considered against Zachary Kleinschmidt. The Wood County Unit of the Wisconsin Towns Association will meet on Friday, September 15th at 7 p.m. in the Siegel Town Hall. I'm Melissa Kay, Civic Media News.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Lows dip down to about 54. Tonight, under clear skies, southerly winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Cloudy skies expected. Tomorrow, chance for scattered rain showers. Daytime highs approaching 74. Overcast skies again. Tomorrow night, chance for scattered thunderstorms. Lows level off around 53. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 71.
Welcome, everyone, to Midday Magazine for the September 14th, 2023. Have your host, James J. here at 3:30. We're going to welcome in Jasmine Carbajal, 4-H Associate Educator with Marathon of Wood Counties. Right now, we have with us our good friend, Jim Benna. He is the District Administrator at Ed Hoyer Elementary School Principal and Port Edward School District. Ed, Jim, thanks for being here.
It's great to be here, James. Thanks for having me today.
Appreciate the time. You know, we were joking in our pregame. We only get together once a year and everything.
Yes.
We got to make a habit out of this. We got to get you back every year. It's fun to do this. We are in the beginning of the school year. Before we dive into your new role or some of the goals there and some of the happenings of the district, how is the beginning of the school year feeling so far?
It's feeling great, James. We had a school board meeting last night, and as I shared with our school board members, some of our stakeholders, there's a lot of energy in our school buildings. There's a lot of positivity, a lot of enthusiasm. Of course, we went through the COVID period, and there was so much uncertainty. There was so much unknown. Although there is some illness that's going on in our school districts right now, we feel for the most part that's in our rearview mirror. Mm-hmm. And I think everyone just has a lot of optimism, feeling really good. Our school district is fully staffed. We have very nice class sizes. We have a lot of great extracurriculars taking place. So, there's a lot of good things happening in our school district.
I've said before, I don't think there's anything stronger in the universe than the human spirit. And I don't think there's anything more adaptable than kids. Kids are so adaptable. And while I don't take that lightly, I commend and I admire that. I think we adults could actually learn a little bit from kids when it comes to that. I do worry, and I know I'm not alone on that one. We are a couple of years removed from COVID and everything, but there is still not so much a concern of that, but just a concern of how the kids are doing. Are we at a place now where we're kind of they're feeling more and more comfortable now? Like last year was there a little bit. Now we're a little bringing it home and even more. They're feeling even more comfortable in school in that?
I think so, James. Mm. I think so. I'm sensing much more security, less anxiety in our school district. And going back to your first point, our children are extremely flexible. Mm. They're flexible. They're resilient. I think resilient is a good word with our children, and we've seen them overcome so much during COVID. Mm-hmm. There is certainly some learning loss that took place, and that's well documented in the media. Some learning loss took place. In the Port Edward School District, we are working very hard to address mm-hmm. that. We have multiple interventionists that we have newly hired over the last few years, mm-hmm. and those academic interventionists are working with our students who have been identified through assessments, and we are actively engaging with those students to improve their academic mm-hmm. scores. We're not seeing a significant amount of learning loss, but we want to identify it as quickly as we can, intervene, and help our children move forward for the best outcome possible.
Yeah. Now that's the kind of stuff I would like to see the mass media covering.
Absolutely.
We don't hear about that.
Absolutely.
We don't hear about these assists, this help that's going on behind the scenes like that. That's not only really smart. It made me feel good hearing that. Like, mm-hmm. As somebody who, I'm one of these weirdos that cares about the future and these kids mm-hmm. and everything. So, yeah, that seems pretty cool. That's great.
You know, unfortunately, that probably doesn't sell the papers, right? That's the old old adage. James, if you came into our buildings, I think you would be inspired. You mm-hmm. would see great things happening because one of our mantras in Port Edwards is everyone is a teacher. Mm. And whether you work in the kitchen, whether you drive a bus, whether you are a classroom aide, a teacher, an administrator, a custodian, clerical staff, we all work with children. We all try to make them maximize their potential, show them hope in the world. We are their biggest supporters. We're their biggest cheerleaders. We're their biggest advocates. So there are, you would see amazing things happening in our school district every day. And as you said, unfortunately, those don't get the headlines, yeah, right? It's the bad stuff. It's the tragedies. It's the unfortunate things. And when people see that day after day after day, I think sometimes people think, what's going on in our public schools? Mm. Those are a lot of one-offs, really. They truly are. I see from being in our schools, there are great things happening every day, and I'm very proud and very happy to be here today to share some of those.
Yeah, and we're definitely going to cover those stories. We will always cover those stories here WFHR. When it comes to the beginning of the school year, it's not just new for kids and parents and you and your staff, but us as citizens, we have to keep our eyes open a little bit more. Like, you should already, you know, be looking out for kids and everything, but now a little bit more so. Are there other things that you, from your perspective, think that we as citizens, as adults, should be doing at this time of year as we're all getting used to this, you know, the new schedules?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, this time of year, you know, one of the first things that just pops to mind is as everyone is driving to work each day on their morning commute, just be aware there are children walking to school, riding their bikes. We have school buses in transit. Please use caution. Everyone wants to get to work, and it seems like a lot of people are in a mad scramble in the morning. Please be very cautious around our school buses. Please take just an extra moment of time to look out for those stop arms, to take your time. If everyone uses just a bit more caution around our school buses and around our children as they come and go to school, it'll be a much safer community.
Mm-hmm. I know we have Craig Broren, our superintendent, on all the time, and Craig and I have talked about a couple of different things, unfortunately, year after year that he's joined us, and one of them is looking for school bus drivers. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to send that out there just as we have the segue into it. You know, we're still looking for great bus drivers out there, and it's a great profession and a great way to, I don't know, I've talked to a couple of school bus drivers over the years, and one of the most consistent things they say is how young they feel doing it. Mm-hmm. How much they enjoy being around the kids. I had one bus driver tell me, my bosses are all children. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a really good line. I thought that was really good. And,
absolutely.
They enjoy that. I encourage people to look into that more.
It's a bit of a national issue. People are having a hard time finding bus drivers nationwide, which is really sad. We contract our busing service through Lamers here in Wisconsin mm-hmm. Rapids, and I make a point of walking out to those buses in the morning and the afternoon, and I shake the hands. This past week or so, I've been shaking the hands of our bus drivers, introducing myself, welcoming them, telling them, you're a part of our team.
Yeah.
We are all here for our children, and we have great people driving our buses, and I really do think that, you know, just like classrooms, there are issues from time to time, but being around children, there is something that's priceless. We are helping them. We are supporting them. And those smiles on their faces and those connections, and you see the relationships building, it's really a great job to do.
Yeah. It's one of those things that I imagine fills your cup all the time.
It does.
It's got to.
Yeah.
I want to get to some of the happenings going on over in the district. Let's go with that.
Sure, absolutely. The major thing that's happening outside of our school district right now, or outside of our classroom walls, rather, is we will be going to referendum in April of 2024. This past spring, we partnered with CESA 10, and we have developed a facilities committee. We've had two facilities committee meetings. These committees consist of 25 individuals, about 20 people from our community, from the school district, five staff or so, and we've done extensive tours of both buildings. And we have a 90-year-old high school, we have about a 55-year-old elementary, and unfortunately, the funding from the state, while we've been able to maintain our buildings as best as we can, some of the major things, the heating units, some of the masonry work. We have a beautiful brick building at the high school. It needs some extensive work that our state aid just can't fund right now. So our facilities committee has identified some of those things. We had a facilities meeting on August 22nd. We had one just this past Monday night on September 11th. We have identified that in next April, we will be looking at a $7 million capital referendum. Capital referendum is for major building and grounds projects. Our state aid allows us to do minor building and grounds projects. Unfortunately, state aid has not kept up with the needs of school districts. This will be the second referendum that the Port Edward School District has gone to in the last 50 years only. We feel like we have been very good stewards of the taxpayers' funds in Port Edwards. The last one, we did one in 2018. Prior to that, it was 1968.
Wow.
So we have really worked to keep our buildings, keep our staffing, keep our programming with what we've been given. Unfortunately, the state aid and how it's been, the formula has been developed in Madison, is not giving us the financial ability to stay up with all of those costs. So therefore, we are looking at going to referendum in April of 2024, a capital referendum for large-scale maintenance needs, and then an operational referendum, which is for our daily purposes.
We've seen, unfortunately, in recent years, some smaller schools in smaller areas have to shut close down. Whether it is because of the facility not having the funding to stay open, or the building itself just not being reliable, or that. We don't want that to happen to any more schools, let alone in our own neck of the woods here and everything.
Absolutely.
With Port Edwards. Are there things we as citizens can do to help with this?
Absolutely. I just think if you could educate yourselves, if you could go to the Port Edwards School District website, PESD.K12.WI.US. Later this fall, I would say by November, we will be having a link on that website that will present all types of educational information about how school funding works in more detail than I'm giving here today, why there's a need for a referendum, the actual impact on property taxes. And I just think if our populace and our community members can educate themselves and then go out and vote. Go out and vote next April, because it really is a choice of our citizens. Do they want to continue to have robust programming in Port Edwards, an outstanding staff, excellent programming, excellent extracurriculars, which we have been known for decades and decades? That's going to go to the polls in early April.
Great answer. I couldn't agree with you more. Do your homework, find out who you're voting for and what they believe in, and please help us support our education system.
Absolutely.
I don't believe I have to say that, but what an interesting world it would be if we put even a quarter of our budget into this, into and just a little bit more, even, let alone not even asking that much, just a bit more to be able to help some of these things. And I would love to see a shift when it comes to this, as far as instead of always tickering and taking away little chip by chip at our education system and our funding for it, to add little by little to it and everything. It's pretty important. You mentioned earlier the documentation of the hits that our kids took during COVID, and we've seen the numbers of that. You can't talk out of that side of your mouth and then at the other side be cutting funding for it. It doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't.
And to the person that wants to, and james.mailf@civicmedia.us, you can go ahead and email me anytime if you don't like what I'm saying. I welcome your feedback. But to me, there is not even a question about this. If I'm going into the voting booth and it says this, I've done my homework already, I'm voting for it. This is our future we're talking about. These are their kids we're talking about.
Absolutely.
There's literally nothing more important than this. Everything we're all doing as adults, it all is about this. Even if you don't have kids, even if you don't even think about the public education system, you are a part of it. And as if I could just get one more thing before I get off my soapbox.
You're doing a great job. You're doing
I don't
a great
want to
job.
Fall off the soapbox. But to the person that is worried about paying more in taxes, you're going to pay taxes. Your taxes are always going to rise and fall. It's going to be an up and a down. But don't you feel a lot better about having that more percentage, knowing that it's going into this? That's what taxes are about, investing in our future, investing in in either the future of our infrastructure or the future of our world.
You hit so many great points there, James. I, of course, as an educator, I couldn't agree with you more, but this is our society. This is our society, right? And it's very unfortunate that we are one of the only entities in government that has to go and ask taxpayers for the money that we need instead of having it, you know, not having to go through all these extra hoops to get that funding. So, no, I couldn't agree with you more. Everyone, every individual that you meet in society here has gone through our school system, whether public or private. We have all benefited from our school system. We are largely who we are today as a result of our school system. So I believe that we have an obligation to pay it forward as adults, to pay that forward and continue to have great schools here in Wisconsin, which we have been known for decades. We continue to have great schools here. However, as, and I think you use the term kind of chipping away at our funding and things like that, that's been happening since 1993. That's 30 years ago now, James.
Yeah.
So as the funding has slowly been chipped away from our public schools, we are having to cut staffing here, cut benefits there. We have to cut. And everyone does that from time to time in their household. I often compare a school budget to a household. There are some similarities there. There are times when we have to tighten our belt. There are times when we have to spend a little less. There are times when we have what we need. For 30 years, school districts have been tightening their belt and cutting away and cutting away. And at some point, you lose value in what you have. So I think everything we've talked about over the last 5 or 10 minutes here, funding our public schools, it has to be a priority.
Another, just one last note on this, that if a big part of the conversation right now is keeping people in state or bringing new people into the state, that is a big conversation from small town to big town. How many people are moving to a city or a state that they're not putting into the school system? How many young families are going to go to that? What's one of the first things you're doing if you're looking at a new house or in a new city? What's the school system like?
James, I've been contacted by families. They have been in our community for less than 48 hours, and I get a phone call. Can we get a tour of the school? We are deciding where to put our children. And sometimes and oftentimes that call happens before they actually buy a house or choose an apartment. They want to know what the school looks like. They want to get a feel for the school. Will their child be safe there? Is there a robust education there? Yeah, you're absolutely right. That choice of school, if it's a good school district, will either attract people or have people move out of the area. All too often, Wisconsin move out of state.
We're speaking with Jim Benna from the Port Edward School District. And Jim, what are some of the goals for this year that you and your staff have?
Sure, absolutely. We want to continue to make the Port Edward School District the best small school district in the state. We want to attract and retain outstanding educators and continue to develop our academic programs. Of course, I mentioned in some detail our upcoming capital and operational referendums. We want to do the work leading up to that in April, primarily to address our aging facilities. We want to promote the positive culture that we have in our district, in our community, throughout central Wisconsin, in order to continue to make Port Edwards a school of choice. James, I want to hit on Port Edwards as being somewhat of a hidden gem here in central Wisconsin. Very often, of course, I hear conversation, even socially, so much about where parents send their children. And I hear the term, they're just a number. I hear that so often in a bigger school district. They say, well, I don't want my kid to go to a bigger school district because they're just a number. Our bigger public school districts do an excellent job. But unfortunately, at times it does become a numbers game.
Yeah.
That is not the case in Port Edwards. We have the best of both worlds. We offer a large number of extracurriculars. We offer a great drama program, great forensics program, student leadership, instrumental music, choral music. We have many of the academic, extracurricular, and athletic programs that big school districts have on small teams and small groups. That means everybody gets an opportunity. Sometimes children, if they're in a larger school district, they may feel intimidated if there are 40, 50, 60 kids out for a team or a group. We have a smaller school district. They feel comfortable. They are known by each teacher. We have individualized instruction. So we really feel like we have the best of both worlds, and we have a lot to offer here in the Port Edward School District.
Well said. You have a new role that I wanted to ask you about. Can you tell us a little about that?
Sure. This school year, we have had a bit of an administrative change. I am serving in a dual role this year. Last year was my first year in the district as district administrator. I'm also serving this year as the elementary principal. And in my prior administrative position in the Marion School District, I had 8 years of experience as the elementary principal and superintendent in a very similar size school district here in Wisconsin as well. So I'm bringing those skills to Ed Hoyer Elementary as well. And again, we are about 8 days into the school year, and I couldn't be more pleased or more happy to be the building leader at Ed Hoyer Elementary School. Seeing the smiles and the energy and the positivity of our young children, it just brings a smile to my face, and it warms our hearts. So I love that dual role.
I can feel it from you. I get the vibe just even talking to you and seeing you and everything. It's all over your face, and it's so cool to see. And I'm really happy for you with it. How is it? Is it at all affecting your other gig? Not interfering, but how are you mixing the worlds together?
Sure, absolutely. I think it comes down to scheduling and prioritizing. I don't believe that I have cut anything out. We have great people around us. We have incredible administrative assistants at both buildings that give me assistance with different tasks and things like that. And I think it comes down to prioritizing and scheduling.
We wanted to kind of spend the last couple of minutes we have together, Jim, kind of talking about the Port Edward School District and it being a destination school. I love that terminology, and I want to give the floor to you for this.
Absolutely. It is a destination school, and I'm going to go back and repeat some of the things I said before, but we do have individualized instruction. We have incredible educators in small class sizes. An average class, it's not strange to see a class of 12 to 15 students. And when you are in a classroom with 12 to 15 children for 180 days with a highly skilled educator, you are going to develop a lot of knowledge. You're going to develop a lot of interpersonal skills. You're going to have a robust education. So we have small class sizes. The community of Port Edwards has incredible pride in its school district. We are supported by a number of outside organizations. They support us. We have booster clubs. We have parent organizations. We have a connection through UW-Stevens Point, the Haru Center for Academics. They are supporting Port Edwards Schools. So there's great support for our district. We have great leadership. We have great teachers. We have small class sizes. It truly is a destination school district.
Yeah. There's especially I only went to school for a little while here in grade school, and then most of my education out here was in middle school, high school.
Sure.
But when I was going to school over at Washington, I heard parents and people talking about Port Edwards. And that was years ago because I'm old. It was a while ago. But I remember the area being talked about even then. And as far as how the time that has passed since then, it's only gotten stronger. It only seems to not only the school itself, but the schools in the Port Edwards area, but the community has gotten stronger and everything. So when it comes to, destination school, if my kids were younger and in that area, God, I'd be very happy for them to be going there. One of the things that I think, too, that stands out about the Port Edwards School District to me is the something you've touched on a little bit here. Is the ability for teacher and student to know each other's name. You know, it seems so simple, and it seems like something that we all grew up with. Even I, coming from the cities, had teachers that knew my name from time to time, but not all of them did. And in the school, in this district, you've got that. You've got an ability and at least an opportunity for that. And I think that a lot of people can hear that and, quite easily make the, that means a little more one-on-one time for the kid. And yes, that helps them learn a little bit better, sure. But it's also for the teacher, when you've got, as a parent, I don't know how I made it with two kids. I don't know how they do this half the time. I teach adults and I can't do it. Like, I don't know how you teach kids half the time.
It's not easy, James.
It can't be.
It's a skill. It certainly is.
When it's a little bit less kids, say there's 16, 20 kids in a classroom or something like that, when that one kid is struggling, when that one kid is having a tough time, whether it is with you know, at home or it's with the study, the thing that they're studying, the teacher is able to catch it quicker. The teacher is able to work with them better. It makes it so much easier for everybody involved. Mm-hmm. And to the again, the idea of being able to send your kid to a school like that seems pretty nice.
James, I'm impressed daily. And a term that I use in the district, and teachers, any teachers or staff who may be listening have heard this, heard me say this many times, it's the all hands on deck mentality. Mm-hmm. If a child is struggling academically, struggling socially, if they have any type of problems, I am just blown away every day by how our staff rallies around that child. They communicate, they email, they have little mini meetings together. How can we help this child? How can we help them socially? They identify the problems. They talk about it. And there is help for each and every student in the Port Edward School District. And that individualized attention, it really helps our students grow. It really prevents children from, you know, slipping through the proverbial cracks. And the all-hands-on-deck mentality really provides a great education for our students.
Jim Benna joining us from the district administrator and Ed Hoyer Elementary School principal. Jim, if people have follow-up questions, want to know more about some of what we discussed today, how can they reach you?
Absolutely. If you look at the Port Edward School District website, you will see my contact information near the bottom. James Bina, I'm the district administrator and elementary principal. It should be easy to find on the Port Edward School District website. That is PESD.K12.WI.US.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things I did was threw it in my search engine, Port Edward School, and it popped up right away. So if that's another way of doing it too, and reach out to Jim and his team. And thank you again for the time, sir. Always appreciate it. Have a great school year.
Thank you so much, James. It's been a pleasure. I enjoyed being here today with you. Thanks.
If we don't talk sooner, I'll see you next year.
Sounds great.
At the same time.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll be back with more Midday Magazine right here on WFHR.
Locally grown 1320 AM and 97.5 FM WFHR programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios. Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
For WFHR and WIRI, I'm Melissa Kay. Here's what you need to know in central Wisconsin. Next week, legal abortions will resume at Planned Parenthood locations in the state of Wisconsin. Tanya Atkinson, PPWI President and CEO, made the announcement on Twitter this morning.
This Monday, September 18th, Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin will resume abortion care at our Water Street Health Center in Milwaukee and in Madison at our Madison East Health Center.
Abortion services have been suspended in Wisconsin since last year's U.S. Supreme Court Dobbs decision. Planned Parenthood's decision is based on a Dane County judge's ruling in July that Wisconsin's 1849 law does not cover voluntary abortions.
Planned Parenthood Wisconsin is again able to provide the full scope of sexual and reproductive health care, including abortion, to anyone in Wisconsin who needs it, no matter what.
I'm Melissa Kay for WFHR and WIRI Civic Media News.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Lows dip down to about 54. Tonight, under clear skies, southerly winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Cloudy skies expected. Tomorrow, chance for scattered rain showers. Daytime highs approaching 74. Overcast skies again. Tomorrow night, chance for scattered thunderstorms. Lows level off around 53. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 71.
Welcome, everyone, to Midday Magazine for the September 14th, 2023. Have your host, James J. Mailoff, here, and we're welcoming to the WFHR stage our good friend, Jasmine Carbajal. She is a 4-H Associate Educator with Marathon and Wood Counties. Jasmine, good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
Oh, there we go.
There we go. Good to see you, too.
I actually turned it on and then turned it off on accident. I don't know why I did that to you. It's always nice to have you in studio, to have you around and talk 4-H. We appreciate the time. First off, how are things going with 4-H?
Everything, you know, it's after coming back from the fair, it seems like it's okay, slowing down, but really not, because, you know, it's already mid-September, and so we are in the middle of, well, in the start and middle of our enrollment season. So now that, like, the fair is over, it's time to really start just talking about 4-H some more and see, like, maybe some new youth that want to join our clubs, and our last year's youth, they can go ahead and start re-enrolling for the year again now. And so it's really starting to get crazy again.
I remembered what I wanted to ask, Jasmine. The fair. How did the fair go?
The fair went well. Mm-hmm. We had lots of activities every day over there, aside from like everything scheduled. So kids could come in and families could come in into our junior fair building and just participate in some extra things. We had a digital goose chase going on that families just loved, and the youth just loved it. And that's they had to go around and find different things. And so it was a great fair.
You know, one of the things that you and Laura and I talk about with 4-H is the evolution of 4-H and how much more it is expanded its range of type of kid or any of these things and the things that you guys do at 4-H. But there's certain stuff that just is the same as it's always been with 4-H. 4-H and fairs, they just go together.
They sure do.
But while a lot of us, especially those that didn't take 4-H or anything, we see that and we kind of get that and makes sense.
Yes.
But why is it so integral for 4-H to be involved with fairs from your perspective?
From my perspective, you know, I think that I've always thought that our youth is our future. And so the fair is a perfect place for really our youth, not only in 4-H, but really like FFA and some of these other organizations that come to the fair to really showcase those skills of not only in their animals and what they've done traditionally, but some of the other projects that come in. And that is where we see their talents. That is where they are so proud to showcase kind of what they've done throughout the year and see those skills that they have learned. And for me as an adult, it really just gives me that faith that we are in good hands.
Yeah. I get that feeling. Time and time again, it hits me. And it's like, whew, oh, that feels good. Yeah. It's almost like wiping your forehead. Yes. Like, whew, all right, we got good youth coming up.
We're good.
You brought up something in there that I think maybe not the most integral part of this scenario, but it is important. The pride and the feel good, the confidence the kids take from having their animals or having any of these things out there for the people to take in. There any opportunity to build confidence in our youth, I think, is kind of a part of our job as adults.
I agree with you.
Whether you are involved in 4-H or in the education system or even have kids, I think it's on all of us as adults to do that. And we're able to do that in those situations and the fairs and that.
Yep. The fair is big, and we're always happy to be there and see all the youth that participate and increase our numbers every year, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's always the goal, too, to get more kids involved.
Jasmine, you mentioned enrollment. When it comes to that, for families out there listening and thinking about getting their children involved in 4-H, are there things you should know as far as enrollment goes? As far as districts, if you're listening in this district or that?
That's a great question. So we actually have clubs throughout the county. Mm-hmm. So what we always tell our families is, you know, on our website, which we will mention at some point today, you can go on there and find our directory of clubs. And then you can look and see, okay, do you want to find a club based on where they meet that's convenient to you? Or the day of the week might be more convenient to you. Some of our clubs are more centered around certain projects, like animals, certain animals, or certain things. So is that going to be a better fit for your family? And you can always call our office or call the leaders directly, because their information is on our website as well. And say, hey, can I come check out a meeting and just kind of feel what this is like? And so that's what we always encourage families to do, to come just check it out and see what it's about, and then go from there. So that is one important thing, is looking at that. The other thing is, if you enroll now through kind of November 1st, then that guarantees you going to the fair. So we just finished talking about that. So then, you know, we'll talk about projects and all of that kind of later in the year, but definitely that guarantees you, like, if you're enrolled, you're good to go, you'll be showing at the fair. And so yeah, that would be the first two things to kind of just consider, kind of checking out something. And we're always available. So if there's always like just inquiries, or we always have events going on, you know, throughout the year. So you can enroll anytime, but really this is like our big recruitment period.
Is there age requirements with any of this?
Sure. So for ages, kindergarten through 13th grade, and there's really minimal fees to enrolling at a county level. I think it's like a $3 per member. And we've talked about this before, like, we don't ever want any sort of amount to be a challenge. So that really, we wouldn't really even talk about it too much. If a family's really interested, then we'll talk about it. And if there's a hardship, then no worries. Some clubs might have some other fees, but it's very minimal to join 4-H.
It's something that I champion, and I'm so proud of. Anytime I talk about 4-H, is that right there.
Yeah.
You know, there's a billion things to be proud of. It's one of my favorite things to talk about, though, is that the idea of not letting any kid not be able to take in 4-H for those reasons.
Right.
That's beautiful. That's cool.
We are proud of it, too.
You have some wonderful events coming up. Let's dive into
these.
I'm so excited to talk about these.
Which one do you want to talk about first?
Let's go chronological. Let's go. Okay. Let's go in order of the dates
sure.
of these.
And awesome.
I believe that starts us right at Juntos.
So it actually will start us right at the Cornhole.
Cornhole tournament. Yes, the Cornhole tournament.
So when we talk about kind of the diversity in projects, we started countywide. We kind of revived a program, and it's now our Teen Leaders program. And so this, our Teen Leaders are for 6th grade and up, and if you're interested in this, if you have a youth that's in sixth grade or older and you want to be a teen leader for our county, get in touch with us. We'll get you kind of more information. But the teens, the group that we have right now, they're so excited. They're so ready. They want to be putting on events. And again, right, these are their ideas. Yeah, this is them independently coming up with the things they want to do. So they want to do this cornhole tournament. So this is to wrap up our National 4-H Week, which is coming that first week in October. So it's October 8th, and it's for youth in grade 3rd through 13th, and they will get to pick kind of their category of what grade level they want to participate in. And then it starts at 3, so when they come to the park that we're going to hold this at, they're going to sign up individually ahead of time, and then that day they get to meet their partner. And then we go ahead and we start the tournament, and there will be some trophies I hear and light refreshments. So it's going to be a really fun event. What I'm really proud of is that it really is the teens that are currently members of our county program that are leading this, that are putting this on. Isn't that cool?
How has that gone for them?
So far, it's going well. They did a pool day this summer, and we had a pretty good turnout for that as well. And that excited them more, right, to do more things. And they are starting to look at community service opportunities as well. And so I'm really excited to really just be there, not only to support them, to watch them as well and grow it. So if there's any other teens interested in joining Teen Leaders, let us know.
When it comes to some of the things, like signing up individually, being paired with somebody, and possibility of making new friends, new relationships, was that something they came up with, the teams?
Yes, they were, because I was like, so are you, because I asked her, I was like, are you going to have them sign up as a team already, or individually? Like, no, let's have more fun, and just everybody sign up individually, and we'll just, you know, do it that day, and I love that, because that spontaneity, is how you say it?
Yeah.
It works. It works. That is awesome. I love that.
I growing up, I thought I was one of the one of 10 kids in the whole universe that was bad at making friends.
Yeah.
I just thought that I was world famously bad at making friends. I just was no good at it. And then as I got older and I start having kids of my own and I start seeing them and other children when I teach classes and that, I see, it wasn't just me. A lot of kids have trouble with this. A lot of kids have trouble meeting and interacting with more people or new people. What a great opportunity for that, for just that alone, let alone the fun, the cornholing, all of the other stuff.
And like the age group, right? Like sometimes we have a hard time thinking about what do our teens want to do? What is something engaging for our teens? So this is perfect for that age group that like are just looking to go out and maybe make new friends or maybe just learn something new or just have fun as well and interact with some other youth.
Another fun part of this too, to me, is with the sport itself. It's not too hard to learn. It's one of those ones that everybody can play.
Yes.
And that inclusiveness is really nice too.
Yeah. See, we're excited. I don't remember what I suggested they do. And they're like, no, we want to do a cornhole tournament. Yeah, they're like, okay, we'll do it.
I love that part of it too, that this is, well, you and Laura come up with some amazing stuff and you guys do an amazing job. It's a great idea, not only for a life lesson, for really a part of the point of 4-H, but just in creatively. Just, is kind of fun to sit back and see that happen, I imagine.
Thank you for that. Yeah, no, we do come up with some great stuff, but we always love it when it comes from them because we know they'll engage better that way.
What are the details of this event?
So again, this cornhole tournament for youths 3rd grade through 13th grade, October 8th, and it starts at 3. We want you to sign up by September 30th, so by the end of the month, so we know how many people to plan for as far as like refreshments. We're going to be holding it at the Northwood County Park by that park pavilion there, and there is a registration link on our website, on our Facebook page, and so any questions, you guys can give us a call too.
As we always like to tell you to, we encourage you to follow them on social media. Facebook's a great way to keep up to date on all these things, and another great way to register as well.
Yes, for sure, because we put the direct links on there.
Mm-hmm. The email, and we'll give the, or the website, we'll give this again before we wrap up, 4h.extension.wisc.edu. We have another great event coming up.
We do. So we've talked about Juntos before. Mm-hmm. So we're excited to offer another round of it. So Juntos, it's a very unique program. It's specifically for our Latinx high school students. And we're hoping to expand it this year into our middle school students as well. But we are going to start off again our Juntos program in Marshfield in October, October 12th. And so for those of you that might not know what Juntos is, it's a six-week series where we talk about just different topics related to our education system in the U.S. So we have a lot of families from Latin American countries that come here and they get lost, or the students are a little lost, or, you know, there's this miscommunication. I know with me being a first-generation student, like, just my parents didn't understand a lot of the things that I was going through when I went to college, right? And so we do, with this program, what we try to do is just bridge that gap. Just bridge the gap. That's all we're trying to do. Get the parents and the students on the same page. Show them kind of what their post-secondary education options are. You know, sometimes we talk about a four-year university. That's not the only option out there. I mean, we know this. There's lots of great tech colleges around here. We have lots of other apprenticeship programs that kids can do. So really, it's just diving into those topics in a safe space to say, like, here are all the other options, right? And with the students, with specifically the high school group, you know, talking about what do you need to actually graduate? Did you know that you need these credits and these classes for your school? Did you know you could take dual credit classes? Like, that is sometimes a very foreign concept to some families. So that's, you know, we talk about financing. So what is really, how much does it cost to go to college? Do you want to go to an in-state school? Because that might be $20,000 cheaper than, like, you know, if you go out of state, or even the differences between in-state versus out-of-state tuition. What does that mean? So really important topics for our families that sometimes, you know, we don't realize that some families don't know that. So it's starting in October 12th. It's usually 6 to 7:30 around that. We provide dinner, we provide childcare, and it's at the First Presbyterian Church there in Marshfield. So we're really, really excited to offer this again.
Forgive me if I brought this up before, but growing up where I did, I grew up around a ton of Latin families, and in the melting pot of Chicago, every style of, you know, Puerto Rican, Cuban, Mexican, all of this. A good friend of mine growing up, Carlo, his family's from Puerto Rico, and he was first generation too. I'll never, ever forget, as long as I live, him not being at school one day, and then not the next day, and not the next day. And it was because his parents, and there was this huge divide between them understanding what was going on, what his son was learning, and not wanting him to. For one, they weren't even sure necessarily the school schedule. You know, there was nothing in Spanish. And this is because I'm old. This is the 80s we're talking about. The change, the shift that has gone on with this, where we have things like this available now, where our school systems are that much more prepared for these things.
Yes.
But there's still gray area. There's still kids that slip through the cracks. And that's where something like this is so integral. And especially in a state like this, if I can. Wisconsin has a long history of immigration, but I don't think it's well talked about. Going back to Polish families coming to this country, all the way to Mexican-American families, the Hmong community, so much of it.
Yes.
And this country is built on immigrants.
Correct.
We are all come from immigrants. And so unless you are a Native American, we all come from this.
Yes.
So this is the essence of America. This is classes like this, things like this. It's what we're about. To be able to know about this is pretty cool. It's not for me, maybe, but I just love hearing about this class and that this is something we have.
Right. And as you talk about it, you know, the way that I see it too, like, this is really what equips programs like Juntos, equips our students to succeed.
Yes.
We don't want any of our students to be left, right? Like, without the skills or the knowledge that they could be learning and they could be more successful, because eventually, like, they're going to contribute to our economy, our local communities, right? These are all youth that are going to be involved in one way or another in our country. So like, why not give them those things, those resources that they need, that their parents need, to really help them be successful?
A rising tide raises all boats. Mm-hmm. And when we help all kids, it helps all of us.
Correct. I agree with you.
You mentioned some of the things that are available for this. If you're a family and you need childcare, that is available.
Yes, we have childcare. So we encourage for the whole family to come together mm-hmm. to the program like Juntos. Why? Because then, you know, both of the parents or the family members that the student lives with, they're all getting the same information. That way the kids get, we have 4-H activity. So mm-hmm. then they start learning about just what they can do in 4-H, mm-hmm. right? Like it's not just, it's so much more. So then, you know, we start rolling with those types of things and kind of get them integrated with those types of programs as well. So yes, there's childcare. We know that one of the barriers for our Latinx community is long work schedule sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes, you know, if I understand completely, getting home and feeding the family is important. So let us take care of that. So come over, we'll feed the family for you. So really there, we're trying to minimize as many barriers as possible. It's completely free to participate in Juntos. So if anybody knows of any families that might benefit from this, let us know. If transportation is an issue, we can work around that. We can see how we can either do gas cards or things like that. So we are really excited to offer it. Last year when we offered it, we had one family take it. They absolutely loved it. They absolutely, like, the change from the students of when we started with Juntos from week one and then learning all these things through the 6 weeks, by the end of it, the student was so motivated that, like, the parents are still telling me today, like, we are starting the new year again. This, you know, going into the second year, the student was a freshman. Now it's going to be a sophomore. And the student's just so ready to go. Like, and I was just like, oh, that just warms my heart. Yeah, because
I felt it. Yeah.
You know that motivation now is there. Yeah. And so even if that's the only thing that you get from the program, it's a little bit of motivation because now you know a little bit more. I think that's perfect. I think we've reached the goal.
Forgive me if I'm prying, but Jasmine, would something like this have helped you when you were first starting?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. You know, it's a hard, I think that's why I'm so motivated with expanding this program and really offering it in not only Wood County, but Marathon County, since I cover both counties. Because being a first generation student, there were so many times that, like, even in high school, like, my parents, like, they're like, what do you mean you're going to join a club? What does that even mean? And I'm like, well, that's really important for college applications because they don't look at just my grades. Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, but, you know, in our culture, it's like you just get good grades. And I'm like, yeah, in Mexico, I could get good grades and probably get away with a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, it go into a lot of colleges. I'm like, here, they want to see it, all these other things. Am I involved in sports? Am I involved in clubs? Am I doing community service? Mm-hmm. Because all of those things is what makes, you know, per some colleges or some situations, a whole individual. And so those were really hard conversations because my parents just didn't get it. And I had really good teachers, good teachers that advocated for me and talked to them directly. And that was how they could help me convince them to join, you know, a club. So I think that something like this is so important because it really starts those conversations. And the parents are seen from another adult's, right? Like, at this point now, I'm the adult in the situation that, like, it's okay if your kid wants to do this or that. So it's really helpful. It would have been really helpful for me. So I'm just so passionate about it.
Thank you for sharing that. Yes, appreciate of course. That. Again, can we give the details of this?
Yes. So this will be Juntos in Marshfield starting on October 12th for 6 weeks from 6 to 7:30. Dinner and childcare will be available at the First Presbyterian Church. They are located there at 200 South Lincoln Avenue in Marshfield. And they, you know, if people are interested, we don't even have a link for this. They just can call me up and let me know they're coming. My phone number is 715-261-1244.
Jasmine, I was getting some ink done the other couple weeks ago, and the lady who does my tattooing, Dawn, she's an old high school friend of mine. She works over Images and Ink here in town. Dawn is a big 4-H person, and she heard one of our conversations. I think it was you and I, it might have been Laura, but she was referencing it and talking about it. And when I was talking to her, one of the things I realized was you and Laura and I, of course, certainly we focus on the kids and getting kids involved and enrolled with 4-H. To the parents out there, or maybe to former 4-H members that are still curious about 4-H, that still would like to help, you can. There's this thing called volunteering.
Yes.
We encourage that. If people are interested in it, and how has that gone with volunteering? Could we certainly, I imagine, can use more.
We can always use more volunteers. You know, I love my role as an educator, but I also love it when I have guests or other speakers or other adults with their talents, really bringing those to 4-H. Mm-hmm. And so we can always use more volunteers. We really, you know, run on volunteers. Mm-hmm. Like the majority of our program, mm-hmm. really all of our program is volunteer work. And so we can always use more. So, and also, right, we always talk about this, like if you are a business mm-hmm. or you own a business, you have a space or things like that, let me know, because we're always looking to also diversify where we hold our programs. Mm-hmm. So that way we have a better reach. And so I'm always willing to collaborate with businesses, with parents, with adults that have a special skill or talent, or they want to bring something to 4-H, just let us know. We will take you.
I've talked to people, and I'm just using this, just grabbing out of the ether or something, mm-hmm. but I've talked to a person about wood carving. And, mm-hmm. and one of the things that came up in it was, well, I don't know many kids that wood carve anymore, and I'm worried about it dying. And to him I said, you've got opportunities to keep, you know, make new wood carvers.
Yeah.
You can teach a class on wood carving.
Absolutely.
It's kind of like if you want this to continue, it's on your shoulders. You can help that.
Absolutely. I would love it. Like, because I don't know how to do that. Yeah, right? Yeah, like, you and I could probably, we would be taking that class.
For years, I would take me on my own. If I took the class, though, yeah, that would
and
be
how
so bad.
Cool. And that's what's cool about it, too. Like, you know, I see youth that, like, when I can partner with someone mm-hmm. or when someone has a special skill, they teach this workshop, and then the youth that show up for that are really invested. I mean, and now they have a project that they can like showcase at the fair, or they have a new skill, or they can start fostering this. You know, we could offer it more than once. And so, yes, absolutely. That sounds like a lot of fun.
And you just never know what you might spark in a young mind.
Correct.
And if you get these things out there, that's how we find out or how we make them happen.
That's right.
If we can go over the details of the Cornhole Tournament one more time before we let you go.
Yes. So our Wood County Teen Leaders present a cornhole tournament on October 8th, and that's for grades 3rd through 13th. It starts at 3 o'clock at North Wood County Park here in Wood County. And yeah, we have a registration link on our Facebook page, on our website, and we are just asking people to sign up by September 30th.
And Jasmine, if people have follow-up questions, want to know more, or just ask about certain things, how can they reach you?
So they can either reach me via email, and all of that information is on our website, wood.extension.wisc.edu, or our main office number there with Wendy or Carly is 715-421-8440. And you'll get either myself or Laura, and we'll be happy to help you.
And if you have any trouble with that, I always like to let people know. I throw it into the search engine, Wood County 4-H or something, and your website pops up immediately.
Right,
it's the
away.
First thing there. So
yes, yep.
Either way, you just reach out to the 4-H if need be. Looking forward to hanging out again real soon, Jasmine. Thanks for the time.
Thank you.
We'll have more Midday Magazine for you tomorrow right here on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR. We are locally grown radio.
WFHR Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
Locally grown radio, your home for news talk and sports from Rudolph to Nakusa. 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Monica Ricks in New York.
What's Bidenomics? It's about investing in...
President Biden just delivered a major address on Bidenomics in Maryland, but didn't say a word about his son, Hunter, who's been indicted on federal charges. CBS Evening News anchor Nora O'Donnell has details.
Two counts are tied to the fact that Hunter Biden allegedly filed this form claiming that he was not using illegal drugs at the time of a purchase of a Colt Cobra revolver. That was in October 2018. The third count alleges that he possessed a firearm while using a narcotic.
The White House has said it has nothing to do with the Justice Department's prosecution and will not get involved to avoid the appearance that it's influencing this case in any way. In Georgia, a judge has separated two defendants from a pack, including former President Trump, facing 2020 elections charges. Legal analyst Lori Levinson.
It's probably good news for Trump that he doesn't have to sit there when perhaps the other defendants, Chesbrough and Powell, end up pointing the finger at him. And that's a distinct possibility.
Those two go to trial next month, but Trump's trial date hasn't been set yet. General Motors says it has issued a record offer, including 20% pay raises to auto workers ahead of a major strike deadline tonight. WWJ's Jeff Gilbert is in Detroit covering the negotiations.
While we're hearing some reports of progress, the sides remain far apart on the tough issues like pay, pensions, and job security. The union has called carmakers' proposals insulting. The carmakers say they haven't even heard direct responses to those offers. Ford CEO Jim Farley says a strike would be disastrous.
Aid workers are collecting bodies from beaches now in Libya, where devastating floods have killed more than 11,000 people. Reporter Lena Sinjabs with the BBC.
Questions have been asked about why people weren't warned of cracks in two dams that eventually burst. The government was alerted, but took no action.
States from Massachusetts to Maine are bracing for a hard hit from Hurricane Lee, which could make landfall this weekend as a Category 1. Captain Kevin Battles in Portland helping people pull their boats from the water.
We've had this threat before in the past, and then we've been lucky in the past. Eventually, luck's going to run out and it's going to hit us. This may very well hit us.
Forecasters say waves as tall as 20